For over 10 years, VOC Nation has taken listeners behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Our hosts are not only experts on the business, but have lived in the business. Subscribe and hear weekly podcasts from hosts like legendary pro wrestling journalist Bill Apter, former Impact Wrestling star Wes Briscoe, former WWE and AWA broadcaster Ken Resnick, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, former WCW star The Maestro, NWA legend The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, and much more. VOC Nation programming is free on most major podcasting apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com. And video podcast and bonus content is available on Patreon for as low as $3 a month. What are you waiting for? Head to VOCNation.com and dig into the most comprehensive podcast network built for pro wrestling fans. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOC Nation Wrestling Network and follow us on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Yo, this is Jerry Staggs of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobbs here. You getting ready to get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby, because it's about to get nasty all around and up in this mother. Get ready. Nasty Sensation is coming at you.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Hello once again, everyone. It's Mike Tenay from TNA Wrestling, and welcome to In the Room. Here's Brady, Kathy, The Stro, Jordan, and Derek.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back and we're on the air. It's In the Room on the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. Check us out on VOCNation.com and all your favorite podcast platforms. And while you're there, be sure to check out all the other great shows that are part of the VOC Nation Radio Network. Now, of course, I say that, and we only had two shows last week. A lot of people on vacation, but we'll be getting some more content up there this week, I'd imagine. So be sure to check it out. And while we have you, let me introduce myself. My name is Brady Hicks. I've got with me once again the lovely Kathy Fitz. Kathy, I'm glad you could make it on tonight. We're definitely praying for your uncle.
Thank you, Brady. You need it.
Well, hopefully things work out okay. We also have the one and only maestro of professional wrestling. How you doing, Papa Stro?
Oh, great to be here with you guys. You know, I got to tell you, when I first heard that intro, first time a while back, the singing intro, I really thought you were singing that song. I was like, man, I'm impressed with Brady.
Thank you. Yeah, that was me.
Pretty awesome.
They hit me up for that. I should have said the award-winning or the future award-winning Papa Stro Maestro. I hear you're making towns with the movie.
Yeah, The Devil's Daughter, yeah. I already won our first award, and we're submitted to the film festival for next year, so really excited, you know, about the possibility, so see what happens.
And we have back, and I'm so glad that you didn't die, because I was ill-informed. I was told that you were gone, Patrick, and I'm so glad that you're with us. We have Pat Hackett once again. How you doing, Pat?
That's why you can't listen to the dirt sheets, man. You know what really happened is I was in Syracuse, New York, and there was like 56 different sailors there. And, you know, I got shirt off of them, if you can see my anchors.
Yeah.
But the rest of it was real bad.
Oh, jeez. And the one and only Kevin Brady joining us once again. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm good, Brady, although I got to say I'm a little disappointed. You never introduced me as the lovely Kevin Brady, and for that I hurt a little bit.
Well, we'll be doing that moving forward, and you'll be very sorry that you said that. But, no.
Look, I'm now, lovely, goddammit.
We're going to have a good show tonight. We are. Lots of interesting topics. Actually, I only got two of your topics, so a lot of this is going to be on the fly. But we'll have fun
two
anyway.
Two interesting topics.
Two very interesting topics. Kevin, I don't even know how to begin with yours. First of all, let me give out the number, 914-338-1885. We're going to be talking about wrestlers in Hollywood. We're going to be talking about our favorite angles as well. And we have a couple callers on the line. Real quick, I just want to go to 843 just because either way it's going to be an exciting call. It is going to be either of our South Carolina friends. We have two of them. But South Carolina, you're on the line. You're on in the room. What's going on?
Hey there. This is Dr. John. Yeah, can you hear me?
Dr. John, what's going on? I thought you might have been Malcolm. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Thought I would drop in and say hello, hear you, hear Maestro, and just have a great time tonight. So glad to be here with you.
Thank you, man. So you obviously, and I kind of announced it last week, we're kind of entering a partnership with your podcast network, which we have a long history with, going to be advertising a lot of the great content on your shows. Tell us a little bit about what you guys got going on this week.
Well, I'll tell you what, in about either 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to have Vinny Barry on. Vinny did the Lance by Chance book, and it was really, really good. And he just sent me his brand new Wrestleville Volume 1 book. Just got some great stuff from Gulf Coast Wrestling. You know, something that Susan Green, our buddy, knows a lot about. So it's, you know.
I think we've lost the caller.
I don't think so.
That's cool.
What happened?
That's cool, man. That's nothing. I got you.
Okay, so that's what we got. That's what we got going on. The Amazing Velvet is back. He's back for a while. He's been down a little bit with his health, but he's coming back strong. So it's good to have him back, and you know, just a lot of great things going on with pro wrestling interviews. Check us out Sunday night, 9 p.m. And Brady, it's great working with you. You're a one of a kind of guy, along with Papa Stro.
John,
you guys are one of a kind, and thanks and thanks for that little intro.
Love
so
you, Doctor.
I want you to get back to
Doc.
Do what?
Doc, before you go, we were talking Bigfoot off the air. Have you seen Bigfoot lately?
The last time I saw Bigfoot was in Orangeburg, South Carolina, about 8 months ago. I haven't been there since. I see Bigfoot quite a bit in Lakemont, Georgia. Oh yeah, it's kind of interesting. Haven't seen any UFOs in a while. A couple of ghosts here at the house. You know, that's about it. And all that's covered on Scarycast, the greatest paranormal piece of stuff you ever seen. Yeah. So it's a lot
piece
of fun.
Piece of stuff. That's
it.
Yeah.
Really,
have you ever been abducted? It's okay. It's a personal thing. HIPAA and everything.
No. No, it's in my book, 8 times.
8 times. Wow. Okay.
8 times, and I have an implant in my right arm.
8 times.
That means that they went back for you 7 times after the first time.
What could have been so interesting about you that they would come back 8 times?
That's crazy.
I don't know, but I have lost time 8 times, and as I said, it's all in my book. Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies, Look Up in the Sky. It's available on Amazon. So, you know, just check it out. It's a lot of fun. Okay.
Yeah,
so Brady, I'll get
you
a copy.
John. I'm going to read it.
Brady, I'll get you a copy.
Yeah,
don't worry about
time.
That.
I've lost time in the past. Does that mean I've been abducted by aliens?
No, that was alcohol.
Maybe. We'll have to discuss that. And we'll get the Queen of the Bigfoots, Robin, on, and she'll help us out. So that'd be fun to do. Let us know.
Maybe I can get a real live Sasquatch for our video portion of it. That would be fantastic.
That would be the most amazing thing that Brady, you could ever do. That would be amazing.
There's got to be a filter on here somewhere.
No, I was getting ready to tell you some towns you could go. I'll tell you off the air, but there are a couple towns you could go and film some footage and probably get some footage of some Bigfoot. So I'll let you know.
I've gotten some good pictures. So.
It is Krampus season.
Yeah, it is Krampus.
Wait a second. Hang on. I have a very important question to ask here because you've said something a couple of times that's caught my ear.
He's like a guest, yeah.
Is the plural of Bigfoot?
Yeah,
Bigfoot?
I was wondering that too. It's Bigfoot.
I would have thought Big Feet.
Yeah.
Bigfoot?
It's Bigfoots. That is actually the plural. It's
singular and plural, like
anyway,
here.
So it's not like Bigfoot.
It's automatically wrong.
Anyway, Brady,
I
got
like
a quick
Bigfoot
question for you.
Okay.
Brady, are you still doing ghost hunting?
Yeah, I am. Well, not as much as I was. I got away from it at some point, but I'm very much interested in it still.
Okay, we'll talk more about that offline.
That was like a pandemic. That was a pandemic hobby.
Okay.
But
you know,
is it fair to say that you ain't afraid of no ghosts?
I think that's safe to say, although I'm probably terrified, realistically. John, we'll definitely talk off air. I'd have to do another show with you guys for sure.
Absolutely. We'll get that set up. So thanks a lot, and thanks for talking with
and
me.
And we
got to talk
from
to everybody.
Thanksgiving. Thanks for calling on Thanksgiving, too. Sorry I wasn't able to make it.
Oh, that's okay. But anyway, good to talk to everybody. Papa Stro, hello. Kathy, hello. Brady, hello.
Hey.
And I'm going to let you get back to your wrestling guest. Hey.
All right, brother. It's great to
see
you. All right.
If you see Malcolm, tell him to call in. I miss the guy.
Okay.
He can't be bothered with me anymore. Yeah.
Oh.
Please do.
Why not?
Does he text?
Really, he does. Yeah, he does.
Does he text in all caps? That's how I'm picturing it.
I don't know. No, he texts actually in all lowercase because he doesn't really care about the capitalization.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Malcolm doesn't give a damn. You know, he's just Malcolm.
Oh, I know. I know. I miss him. I do. Him and his brother. God bless, man.
Hey, Doc, quick question before you go. When discussing the monster truck Bigfoot, is the plural Bigfoots or Big Feet?
I think that's
the one truck, though.
It's a big fleet.
There were multiple
big feet.
Were there?
But there are multiple
big fleet.
Wow. Yeah. The big fleet of big fleet. All right, John. I love you, brother.
You
we're just having fun.
People down like
all right, take care, Brady, and everybody else.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Take care, doctor.
Okay.
The good doctor. Good doctor. And if you want to be like John and join us on the air tonight, the number is 914-338-1885. Let's jump into the topics. Kevin, I kind of want to start by yours because I couldn't think of one GD example. So go ahead, and I'm hoping I'll be able to think on the fly.
You could?
No.
Right, man. Yeah.
Maybe
so what I want to know is what's the anti-Dwayne? So, like, when you think of Dwayne the Rock Johnson, you think a guy that's come out and had these amazing performances in the mainstream. Who's a guy that tried to do that and embarrassed himself to no end? And for me, it's one of my favorites. It's the Macho Man, Randy Savage, with the entire album, but specifically the single Be a Man, which I don't know the last time you've listened to that in its entirety, but it is available on Apple.
Man,
probably.
I love
YouTube.
That song.
Is it really?
It's on my running mix.
Oh, yeah.
I don't run.
Oh,
it's a great mix.
Astonishingly embarrassing.
Like, it is. It was a tough time for him.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I agree, but he's got so much going against him going into it. Like, you're not a rapper, Lenny, or Randy Pop.
Lenny is.
Yeah.
Lenny is more of a lyricist,
yeah,
I think, than Randy was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's nothing, when I looked at the Macho Man Randy Savage at every point in his life, never does hip-hop artists jump out at me. But here he is, and I, you know, I get that he felt the need to make his first debut single a diss track to Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
Do you think this is going to get picked up on mainstream radio?
I love the interview he did after he made the album with the homies in the back. trying to, you know, it's like he's got the outfit on. And
I mean, I just got the outfit. First of all, somebody told him this was a good idea, right? So it's not like he did this in a vacuum. Randy Savage had, you know, managers and agents and all sorts of people in the entertainment industry saying,
maybe it was George.
Yeah, sure, why not go for it?
Yeah.
You know, this is a good idea. And, well, and like, did he, in his mind, ever picture himself, like, going up to deliver the Grammy Award for Best New Rap Artist alongside Jay-Z? Like, is that what he thought was going to happen? Is that what he thought? Be a man?
Oh, my God. My only regret was that John Cena and Macho Man didn't do a duet.
Oh,
man.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
John Cena, more legitimate hip-hop artist than Randy Savage.
That would be amazing.
John Cena has bars. Like, he's on a couple regular old albums. He's really, really good in the verses. It's a Hustla remix. He's really good in that.
I love this album.
Yeah. Oh, I've listened to it all the time. Like, Brady, you were saying that's on your running mix. Like, that is, well, you know, obviously from what you're looking at, it's not my go-to-the-gym mix.
Right.
It was not my go-to-the-gym mix.
I thought A Bad, Bad Man should have been his theme song.
Yes. Yeah. But he's never won here, you know?
Now, of course, he won as the Macho Man, so doesn't he get some credit? I mean, he did Spider-Man.
No.
He did Slim Jim. Like, I feel like Slim Jim alone can't
figure
that out.
This one.
And then he's in the positive for Spider-Man.
No, nothing cancels that out. That's so embarrassing.
Slim Jim?
That it can't be. And by the way, that is so embarrassing that it can't be canceled out. And I still had to say that was more embarrassing than Hulk Hogan's career, which was, when Hulk Hogan's foyer into music was One More Hulkster in Heaven, which is just the most nonsensical song ever written about a fictional child that died and wasn't going to be at SummerSlam or something. He managed find rhymes for he shoehorns the word Wembley into that song by Wembley.
I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember anything but the title.
Up. This one is also available on YouTube. This one not on Apple Music, but you can.
Did he wear the hard hat? Did he wear the hard hat from Pile Driver at least?
From the Pile Driver album. No,
yeah.
This was the whole Rules album.
Okay.
This was his solo effort.
Yeah, this was not If You Only Knew.
No, Pile Driver was like a various artists kind of thing, if I recall.
Okay. Yeah.
Hulk Rules was his solo album where he really tried to take a butt. Yes. His gets canceled out by the rest of his career. Macho Man's foyer into the mainstream, you've got the bit part as Bonesaw, and you've got really the laughable Slim Jim commercials that were.
I don't know, but the Slim Jim keeps him in, like,
that's what I
people's minds. People still know Macho Man and the Slim Jim. I mean, and the
I would argue most people know him more because of Slim Jim.
My younger brother used to bang Macho Man. I was hiding out at the convenience store whenever he'd go buy Slim Jim.
No, sure. For sure. I look at it like if it were a VH1 Behind the Music documentary, Be a Man Hulk would be that period when he's kind of getting bloated. It was toward the end, and it's like people all talking about how concerned they were about him. By all accounts, he was having a rough time in his life at that point. I give him a pass. Slim Jim alone, I give him a pass.
And by the way, that's the other thing. There was never an opportunity to come back from it because Be a Man was so late in his run that just a couple years later, he's gone.
According to Hulk, they patched things up.
I'm sorry.
According to Hulk, they patched it up.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
You know.
They happened to run into each other at the doctor's office. Stroh, you were telling us that time about when Savage called you in Puerto Rico.
Doctor's office.
This was an amazing story. Can you tell that story? I love that story.
Okay. I'm down in San Juan. I was like a wrestler for Carlos Colon, Carlito's dad at the time, WWC. And I'm sitting in a condo there with Sean Morley from Val Venus.
Sean Morley was
the
there?
Phone rings. Yeah. We're watching the E-Channel. Seeing all the goofiness that goes on there. And then he gets picked up the phone first. And he gives me the strangest look. Who is it, right? And he says, it's the Macho Man, and he really talks like that. I'm like, get out of here. I thought he was ripping me, right?
Yeah.
I got the phone. I'm like, hello? And he's like, hey, how you doing? I've been trying to reach you. Put a lot of belts, you, you know, the Hulkster and everything, you know. I'm like, are you, is this
I'm thinking it'd be like Owens or something, you know?
Yeah.
But, it's actually Brady calling you.
You know, like, hey, what's going on?
I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it.
Hey, brother, you're your dad of Puerto Rico, brother.
Ooh, yeah. I don't think my voice is that high.
For the Macho Man.
Yeah, I was doing those New York style hot dogs to get from the beach. And he went dead in concession stand there. And
yeah.
It was amazing. A guy from New York would cook them. They're like, fantastic. And, you know, what better way to start your day eating a New York style hot dog talking to Macho Man?
Yeah.
Hey, brother, I got this idea where I'm going to sell hot dogs on the beach. Come on, brother.
Hey, I'd be all in. Yeah, him and Hulkster actually flew me from the
beach. You had me a hot dog.
For the tryout and everything, yeah.
Oh,
and I
awesome.
Got to meet Eric and all the
that is
boys,
cool.
So.
That is cool. That is cool. Now, from best day of your life to worst day of your life, I did think of one, and I don't know if this would actually work, but I'm thinking Sid from that WCW movie. He was horrible. He was from
Ready to Rumble?
Yeah, but Sid
he was in Ready to Rumble?
He was. He was.
I do not recall that.
Yeah. And he was not
he
very good.
To be in Sid?
He was just trying to be in Sid. There was no acting.
The triple cage thing they had at the end?
Yeah. Well, he was like one of the, because you remember they went after him, I forget if it was in an alley or at a gym or something. Sid was one of the assailants.
Yeah.
Sid was one of the guys that came after
him. The villain, he was the same guy from Bad Boys. He was the police chief.
Yes.
The police chief from Bad Boys.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 And Sid, anyway, just in general.
Wrestling icon Oliver Platt.
Yes.
Good
oh,
movie,
man.
Bad performance. Sorry, Sid. Hopefully he doesn't get me through the phone.
Yeah, I have a definite soft spot in my heart. But
absolutely, me too.
Did I
got a kid that had a Booker T dance with George Clinton in that movie. That was hilarious.
Did I ever tell you about the time that I hung up on Sid? It was not a very pleasant experience. He was supposed to do this show, and he wanted me to call to just run over some things with him, and he was plugging some show that he was doing. And I hadn't gotten all the details from the promoter, so when he started asking me about it, and I didn't know at the time, he's like, oh, I'm calling bullshit. Like, there's no way that this is. And I'm like, and he starts arguing with me. He's like, if this is legit, then you're unprofessional and blah. I was like, dude, the interview's 2 weeks from now. Like, I think I'll be ready. You know, I think we'll be fine. So he starts yelling at me. He starts berating me. He started. Yeah. He starts berating me. So I hung up the phone. I thought, what's he going to do? Come after me through the phone with scissors, you know? But
you know, imagine.
That's his move.
Can you imagine?
A lot of heat on you, Brady.
He called me back. He called me back, and I'm like, I'm so sorry. I got disconnected. I'm terrified. But to this day, I've avoided conventions where I knew he was going to be there, and I don't think he would remember that. But,
Oh, yeah, man.
That was scary.
So,
he was there for the Shockmaster debut, remember?
Yeah.
He was, yes. Yeah. He could have been the Shockmaster, as far as I'm concerned. And
that's
where
I was going to go with this.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was the weirdest way that you got into mainstream. And I think plenty of non-wrestling fans know enough about the guy in the Stormtrooper helmet who trips on the entrance and messes everything up. But then, it's like, you're foray into mainstream. And so I got Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And let's go with the, World Bodybuilding Championship? Is that what it was called?
World Bodybuilding Federation.
With considerable vitamins. Oh, my
God.
IcoPro. A good old IcoPro.
That was a good one.
That had to just be anabolic steroids. And then there was the
You got to want it. Yeah.
And then there was XFL again.
Right.
I used to live next to Luger talking to him about that old time.
What,
I know he was like the face of WBF at one
time.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah.
I remember those IcoPro trailers with him working out. He was doing like shoulder presses, big black and white IcoPro shirt.
It was like Lex Luger and Lou Ferrigno.
Now. Big guy was really trying to lock up with me one time.
I do see from the bits that I had a New York, New Jersey Hitman shirt around here somewhere.
Okay, I have a Memphis Maniac hat. So.
I think I have a Las Vegas Outlaws, because I assume they were named after the New Age Outlaws. Pennant somewhere.
You would have assumed.
One
that
would
was
assume.
The thing. Like, why didn't he just go all the way with it? Why did he try to walk the line between legit football league and attitude era? They should have been, like, there should have been a team based out of Austin, Texas. They should have been the Austin Rattlesnakes.
Yeah, the part unknown.
They
should have been a part
that'd
of the unknown
cool.
team, honestly. So,
yeah.
Just in the
exactly.
middle, you know.
You could have a team, because there's, like, that lacrosse league now that like, none of the teams have home arenas. They just kind of travel around the country. You could have had a team where every game was a road game because they hail from parts unknown.
It would have been amazing.
Imagine the Brahma Bulls.
Oh,
the Brahma Bulls.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
But they lost me after the first game when they didn't have steel chairs and angles with the cheerleader. I thought the whole thing was going to be like wrestling, but set on a football.
You thought it was
going to
be gimmick the whole
that's
way.
That's what I was really hoping for. And I still say they'd still be around if that's what it was.
Remember that video game, Mutant League Football?
Yes.
That's
yes.
what it should have been.
Exactly.
It should have been like,
exactly.
you know, fucking guys with weapons. I remember the biggest thing they were promoting.
The football team would suck at golf.
Yeah. Remember the biggest thing they were promoting going into the XFL was, hey,
the
you're going to have locker room cams for the cheerleaders. Like, all right, first of all, you're on NBC, so nobody's going to be showing it. Secondly, holy
that's
shit,
like,
that's crazy.
You just drill a hole through the wall, you know?
Nothing to say here.
That was a good one because Vince McMahon consistently has failed every time he's tried to go mainstream.
And even we were talking about it as Stroh pulled out his $3 million egg right before he went on the air.
Yes.
Even this attempt.
Lay the egg. Another egg.
to tie himself to Red Notice. Like, it's just, come on, Vince. You're the carny who is getting people in, and you've been doing it for 80 years. Like, just accept your role. You're not going to ever be president. You missed that boat already. You probably should have been that guy if you wanted to.
You know, it's a shame that Vince doesn't take a cue from, like, other people that have been mega successes in a single. Like, Henry Ford didn't try to produce Broadway shows, right? He found his lane. I can make a car. That's what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
So Vince just needs to stay in his lane, and everybody would have been much happier.
Yeah.
Except
for the guys
that
work for him, they would still think it sucks, I'm sure.
Well, Joe, what about you? Can you think of an embarrassing debut mainstream?
Oh, my goodness.
The anti-rock.
The anti-rock. Oh, wow.
I would have thought The Miz on Dancing with the Stars, but I hear he was good, even though I didn't see
him. He was very good.
His debut was mainstream.
That's true.
Miz went from the mainstream to the industry.
And that was an embarrassing real-world thing. I mean, he was the goofball with the title belt that everybody hated.
Yeah,
it
was annoying.
The weird thing was, I remember what was it, heck, probably 2001, 2002, right?
I think so,
When he's making his debut, he's transitioning into the business. And it was, from my perspective, as someone who had been, like, you know, so into wrestling his entire life, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of embarrassing. We're bringing in the real world guy. It's like, I don't know, how desperate are we for eyeballs? And like, you know, look, more power to him. He turned out to be
one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all
time. The debut of Oz had to have been right up there.
Oh,
the debut of Oz.
I laughed so hard in my ciders. And here Kevin Sullivan with his voice. It's Oz. It's Oz.
Oz.
Oh, God. Oh, man. But then The Miz going back to mainstream, I mean, you have the Marine movies, and then you have what I'll be watching very shortly because it holds a special place in my heart, the Christmas Bounty Hunter.
I have two copies of that on DVD.
That's awesome. You should give me one.
Just a backup.
They're amazing. You need two copies.
I found them at a dollar store, and I was like, these will make great gag gifts. And I just gave them away.
I would genuinely enjoy that gift.
What was the one? There was one with
Triple H. I will send you a copy for Christmas.
Great.
The Chaperone, Triple H, with on a school bus with a bunch of kids. Do you guys remember this? It was called The Chaperone.
I remember the poster because I've gone by it on Netflix 200 times. I've never dared to watch it.
Is it still there?
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
Wow, I'm going to look that up. Yeah. I feel like it was an action movie.
It's a Big Show sitcom.
I watched that.
And
it's a perfect, that boy turned me on to
that.
I got one.
It's a perfect segue into Sid. We were just talking about Sid earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like my Nitro debut, right? I'm playing the piano up in the Baby Grand up in the rafters while Sid's power bombing people.
right.
You know, I love Dan. He's still like power bombing people. I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna keep on playing, right? So I had no clue why I was playing piano during one of his matches, but
you would think that like
you
had
to play the piano, or was that gimmick?
Oh, that's me. That was me. Jimmy Hart worked with me on the sheet music to play and everything, but that was me.
That's amazing.
Very cool.
Now, did Jimmy Hart kind of hide under the piano telling you which keys to hit? You knew anyway, right? I mean, you were.
Oh, yeah. The thing is, I had to really kick in the bass because the crowd noise would drown out the sound.
Okay. Did they ever give you, like, the arena organs, like, for the hockey teams? Like, where you got the whole arena with the...
Baby Grand, you know, when they had one in the area.
Okay.
They did with the snakes for Jake Roberts. They shipped snakes in for him to use, that type of thing.
Really? They shipped in the snakes? I always thought he
was... Wow. Stro just ruined my childhood.
I know, me too.
Wasn't just one Damien?
Matter of fact,
I always thought it was one Damien.
Here's a funny story for you. One time Jake told me that there was a big crate they shipped in for him, and he asked Vince what was in the crate, and Vince was like, that's your snake for tonight. So he opens up, and this snake is so big. Jake was on his knees. He couldn't even stand up with the snake.
Oh, my God.
It was so huge. So he really thought he had his snake with him everywhere.
Right, me too.
Look at these marks.
Too.
Next, there were multiple Matildas.
I know.
How dare you?
That's horrible.
There were times you could carry the same thing.
I'm done now.
I check out now.
That's sad.
I am heartbroken by this.
I cried
when Earthquake sat on Dan.
That was me.
I'm afraid of snakes.
That was my angle. When they made Snake Brothers.
Really?
It was. All my earliest memories with wrestling seem to center around John Tenner for some reason, you know? Whether it's sitting on Hulk Hogan, sitting on the snake. We were going to talk wrestling angles tonight. We might as well transition into it. That was something that left such a perfect... Because I thought, what happened to Damien? Was he sick so they had Earthquake sit on him? I had no idea that he was just the snake that night. I had no idea.
I mean... Brady, I do want to tell you that no actual snake was harmed by a giant.
Well, obviously, yeah.
I
always assumed he, like, spread his ass or something so that the snake went in between. I don't know.
Man.
I don't know how that works.
We all do. Oh, God. That's a good angle, though.
It was an amazing
angle. By that.
Like,
all the snake angles were great, though. Whether it was
traumatized.
Whether it was, like, the... sitting on, you know, Damien, or the cobra biting the Macho Man on his leg.
That was amazing.
I mean,
there
were just, here's how the million, that angle was.
The $1 million belt in with the bag, and he didn't want to get it. You know?
Oh, God, I forgot about that. That's a good one, too.
Here's how inspiring the cobra angle was, and Hack, you'll know this one.
Oh, yeah.
A friend of ours got married, and a mutual friend was not invited to the wedding, and we were all like, oh, that's kind of shitty that he wouldn't be invited to the wedding. So that friend and I went to a mall that sold, that had a candy store, and inside this candy store we found a giant candy snake. It was like a gummy bar, but it was the size of a giant
snake. It was a candy cobra, too.
It was a cobra.
Oh, wow.
So we put it in a box, and we wrapped it up nicely, and we gimmicked the box with a piece of wire so that when you lifted it up, the snake would come up with it.
Oh, no.
At this guy's wedding. Not a day later. gift. And you can't open a gift at a wedding. It's so fucking tacky. But I'm like, no, no. You have to open this gift. It's from our mutual friend.
That's amazing. I want one now.
And he opens it up, and here comes the cobra.
Tell me the videographer.
We're not friends with any of those people anymore.
I wonder why.
We don't know them.
Tell me the videographer got it, please. Please tell me that it was documented on, because that would be amazing.
Also, those people no longer married, so.
No.
That's true.
I'm sure wrestling has played a part in it.
Who knows? I like to believe I did.
Probably.
Our business partner.
I can tell you stories off the air about why.
Yeah.
He's thinking about Rick and Morty Snake.
Rick and
Morty Snake. Our business, I was going to say, it's usually wrestling related when marriages don't work out and somebody likes wrestling. That usually is at the core of it. Bruce Wirt, our my partner in this, the voice of choice, the VOC Nation, all that. He's been married 3 times, and one of the times he got divorced because his wife said, "I do not want Rat Boy in our car." And he picked up Rat Boy. He chose Rat Boy over Lana or whatever her name was.
Not worth it.
Or whatever not that name might have been.
I never met her, so I only knew wife 2 and 3. So.
I wish you guys were there with Brady and I, Kathy, when Rat challenged Virgil for the $1 million.
He did. He had his cardboard rat trap title. And he tried to swap them out. We're at a convention, and Virgil was next to it. So Virgil was on this side, and the Sandman and Raven were on this side. For some reason, they had them sitting together. But Ratboy took his title when Virgil wasn't looking and swapped it with the $1 million belt. Virgil was not happy.
I'm sorry,
and
how many dollars did Virgil charge him after that? 30?
I forget.
I gotta say, a lot of guys love to charge money for a picture or an autograph at a comic show. Virgil is one of the biggest offenders I've ever.
Oh
done.
My god!
I was at the Philadelphia Wizard World Convention.
Yeah.
Probably 2000 and maybe 2000, 1999, 2000, something like that. And you know, actually, it was with the same guys that were involved in the whole snake incident. And the Wizard World Convention and. You know, Virgil is sitting at a table like 30 feet away, and he's charging $50 for a snapshot. And I'm like, I'm not paying $50 for a picture of Virgil. But, you know, get a camera, you just try to snap one from a distance. Oh, he wasn't having it. Virgil got very upset.
I'll bet he did.
Him sitting lonely by himself at a table. Greg the Hammer Valentine, another one that's just like.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of them. So I was at one where Virgil came and they didn't book him in the convention. I think he thought he'd be able to just get a table when he got there. So he set up. He set up his and by the way, his thing, his if you've ever seen it, like any parade, anytime he's at anything, he uses the banner that says the $1 million man Ted DiBiase and Virgil. And he folds it over so it just says "and Virgil." This is what he uses at his table. If somehow Virgil hears this, and I don't think he would, but I'm not making fun of you. I just think it's amazing.
Oh, respect the hustle.
This guy, so much hustle. He showed up at this convention he wasn't booked at, and when they didn't take him, he set up his table outside by where the valet parking was. Right outside of the door. Like, it would verge
Pete
on
Rose him. The Hall of Fame every year.
Basically. And,
Pete
and
Rose
that particular show.
Every year and sits at the table outside.
And that particular show, I believe that, by the way. And that's exactly how Virgil. So Virgil went into the bar later that day, and he asked for a water at the bar, and he brought his own sandwich, and they kicked him out. Because he wouldn't get rid of his sandwich.
You know that meme where the guy's sitting outside at a table with a sign that says, like,
"Change
whatever,
my mind.
Never convince me otherwise." It's like, my name, I'm picturing him now with that, and his sign says, "My name's Vincent, not Virgil, change my mind."
Yeah. But back to that convention with Ratboy, that was amazing. Like, he went up to New Jack. I told him, leave New Jack alone. I said, I don't want...
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
It's good life advice. Even now he's gone, I'm still scared of him. I should be, because he could come back at any... And now he can walk through walls, that MF, you know? Like, I'm scared to death. So this guy, Ratboy says, I'm going to go get New Jack and get him to come over here. Stro, you were there. I said, no, don't bring in New Jack. Leave that guy alone. The one time I was on a show with him, he almost tasered me by accident because he's playing with a taser like he's the big boss man. You know, and not a good idea. I wasn't even talking to him. I just had my back to him, and he's going like this with the taser.
Everybody who's been in the business has at least one New Jack story. Man, he was something.
He's scary.
He admitted that on national television. Thank God he died before it went to air.
Yeah.
And I
was at the roast. I think it was Terry Funk. It might have been Jim Cornette, where New Jack showed up. I think it was probably Jim Cornette, because I know they were close. And he showed up drunk, and was just standing in the middle, belligerently arguing like the Scott Hall incident the year before with that comedian. It was insane. He's just and nobody wanted to clear him away because he's friggin' New Jack, you know. We were at the convention, and Rat Boy said, I'm going to go bother him. I said, do not go near him. He comes back, and he's like, New Jack wanted me to show you this. And he holds up his phone, and there's a picture of New Jack just going like this. Terrifying.
He's one of the guys, he's one of the few guys in the business that I would really look at as legitimately scary.
Yeah.
Like, New Jack, Taker, the Road Warriors. You know, those guys, I'm like, you know what, I'm legitimately not going to fuck with those guys in a dark alley.
Any of them MMA guys.
Hulk Hogan doesn't intimidate me at all. Yeah. He's a big muscle.
Well, yeah.
You know, Ken Shamrock seems very approachable for being the world's most dangerous man. Like, I could say hi to Ken Shamrock.
I think you could say hi to him, but I wouldn't want to mess with him. I guarantee you that.
No.
We had Dan Severn on this show, and I was terrified to offend that guy because I have a history of sometimes offending the guests when I talk to them.
Did you call him Magnum P.I.?
No, but he looks like that. Yeah. No.
Steve Blackman, another one I wouldn't want to mess around with.
I loved me some Steve Blackman.
He was great. He was great. When Dan Severn did the show, afterward, he wanted detailed statistics on how many listeners, and I didn't want to give it to him because there weren't that many at the time. And I'm like, you know, where do I go with this? Because I don't want to lie to this guy, you know. But
we lied to people when we were on our alma mater's radio station. We lied to people all the time.
Yeah,
that's how we go backstage at the UFC.
I'm about to say that we're credentialed reporters for the UFC twice. Yeah,
that's funny. So wrestling angles. Mine is Jake the Snake, Snake number 752, getting sat on.
ruining childhood.
Seriously.
So
next, you're going to tell me. Next, you're going to tell me Santa doesn't exist, and I'm just going to be just blown away.
No, his name is Xanta. Xanta Claus, I believe.
Xanta, yes. Great angle.
Oh,
by the way.
So,
the cousin's name's Melana. Melana Claus.
The thing that made me think of this is
No trade.
That's a good one. that made me think of this
just
is MJF and CM Punk. That promo that was fantastic, and kind of how you see that storyline kicking off. And I have an incredibly huge soft spot for the Miz. I'm a huge Miz mark. I think he's done more with less than just about anybody else in the business.
True story. I'm the reason that he was number one in the 500 that one year. Because everybody else wanted Cena, and I came in with this detailed spreadsheet of how he did more than Cena that year. And I presented it, and I won them over. It was like 12 Angry Men or whatever, the jury movie. That's what it was like. Yeah.
Knowing Hack as I do, I would argue that he does not, in fact, have a very big soft spot for the Miz. I would say he actually has a very small hard spot for him.
No.
He's great.
So I was thinking about some of the angles that Miz was doing, and it brought me to, like, my two favorite angles of all time basically lasted the length of the companies, and it was Sting versus Ric Flair and Tommy Dreamer versus Raven. And
I think
the long...
I mean, that was 2 years.
the longevity of the angle and how it like interweaves and it comes and it goes. And even that last Nitro, you know, you close it out with Sting and Flair.
And that's a good
even
one.
Even when they weren't associated with each other, they were still there. And like Tommy and Raven going back and forth and never quite getting the W. I miss that long-term storytelling. And I think WWE is kind of doing it a little bit, but should be hyping it up a lot more anytime that the Usos and the New Day are against each other, because they've been these dynamic forces in the company and they've been intertwined. And I just feel like we don't have that long-term storytelling anymore. Man,
no,
I love that.
No.
I love every now and then, like when Flair would trick Sting into being like, oh, you're going to be a horseman this week. Come on, Stinger. And Sting, like Charlie Brown, would run towards that football every time.
Right.
Isn't the best part of the Raven Tommy angle is that Tommy finally gets his win over Raven in the Loser Leaves Town match, and Raven shows up on Nitro. They're like, it's a legit Loser Leaves Town match.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, I was going to say not for nothing, but my favorite TNA angle of all time actually involves Sting, Ric Flair, and a Raven all in one. It was when Sting made Eric Bischoff sit at the desk not to interfere in his match. Ric Flair was involved as well, and he told him, who's that, Dixie?
Yeah.
It's me and Dixie. It's tough to see.
Oh, I got a Dixie picture. That really sounded dirty.
I don't want to see your Dixie pic.
I have a Dixie pic. It would be like,
I'm going to send you guys a Dixie pic in the chat. Hang on.
Yeah, I will, too. I will. No, but Sting, he made Eric Bischoff sit at the desk and not interfere, and he put a crow in front of him, and he said if Eric Bischoff got up, this crow was going to peck out his eyes. And they kept coming back to him during the course of the match where Eric Bischoff is like this at the desk with the frigging crow, like, ready to get him. It was the most amazing angle I've ever seen TNA do. It was just great writing. Yeah. So
I would say that mine is the build-up to, and this, you know, this, I think, heck, you're going to figure this one is going to sound strange coming to me, but the build-up to and the finish of the WrestleMania 12 Iron Man match. Because Brett lover that I am, the whole build-up to that match with, you know, the childhood dream.
Sure,
The emotional
Rosario.
Really pulled that with, Wasn't it Pedro Morales?
Jose Lothario.
Whichever. The whole build-up, and then that moment when Shawn actually captures the title and drops to his knees in the middle of the ring.
Oh,
that,
man.
To me, that's one of the best payoffs
that was
to an angle that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
An emotional moment.
That was
even
cool.
I was a big Brett fan, but, like, That's like a seminal moment in professional wrestling. I feel like we need more of those. Honestly, I feel like the MJF CM Punk promo could end up being that if there's like a good payoff and it lasts longer than one pay-per-view cycle.
Yeah.
But it, you know, we haven't had those big moments anymore.
And I was going to say that what was so cool about the Shawn and Brett thing from WrestleMania 12, that was really the first WrestleMania where the wrestling was the focus. You know, I mean, they had celebrities there, but it was like, you know, these two workers are going to go an hour. You never saw that with Hogan or Warrior, a little bit with Savage, but usually with his opponent, especially in the main events, he was kind of limited there. So it was like, it was really cool to see. You know, it was just, and that was kind of when it changed.
Yeah.
And especially the way the styles were put on display, because, I mean, you know, Shawn had such a frantic, high-impact style, and Brett was more of a plodding, methodical type style, and they matched each other beat for beat for over an hour. It goes to overtime. You have that great moment of Gorilla Monsoon coming down and declaring sudden death. Shawn hits that first super kick and can't get up for the cover. I mean, it's just the drama that they built over an hour is, honestly, I say this to my friends who are not wrestling fans, but who are fans of, you know, like theater or other forms of acting and entertainment. There are some matches that you can watch. Not every match is good enough to live up to the standard. But there are some matches that you watch where the level of drama that these two guys can put you through, over the course of however long they're in the ring together, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever, that can be just as good as a performance of Death of a Salesman or Hamilton or whatever your taste is, just to see the drama that two people can build with nothing but the physicality of these.
It was an amazing time. And speaking of amazing times, I'm actually going to bring on Ray Bogus right now. Ray, how you doing tonight, brother?
Hello, man. What is the topic du jour of the evening?
Well, right now we're actually talking about our favorite angles of all time in wrestling. And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Earthquake sitting on Jake the Snake's snake. Stro ruined our evening by telling us that Jake, in fact, had multiple snakes, one in each town. Very sad to hear that, Ray. I mean, Pat and I are still
beside ourselves. Usually it's the rats you have one in each town, not the snakes.
Yeah. Maybe some of them as well.
About Jake on the road.
Yeah.
Jake's snakes got around quite a bit on the road, from what I was told by some people.
We were also talking a little bit about who would be the anti-Dwayne Johnson, you know, who made a mainstream appearance that just is absolutely cringeworthy. And I think we were each able to kind of scrape one up there. So, did you have a favorite angle, Ray?
So, a couple of them come to mind. Yeah, I mean, historically, the heart punch angle with Ox Baker, I think, is probably one of my absolute favorite. Part of it may very well be because at the time it was new, or at least, you know, was certainly fresh. More recently, and if you want to go really recent, Chris Jericho's List, I thought was enjoyable.
That's a good one.
Because if you said, hey, Ray, tell me why you love that gimmick, I could come up with exactly zero answers. But damn it if it wasn't enjoyable.
Oh, but come on, that turn with Owens where he gives Jericho the list and he goes, why is my name on here?
The celebration of friends, yeah.
Oh, God. Yep, and you know what? That terrible WrestleMania that I sat in the Orlando Heat during and had to witness one of my favorite wrestlers and his spouse go against a couple who were definitely getting fake engaged for ratings. And that started, I think it might have been the opener, that Jericho and Owens, man, they put on a hell of a show with a giant inflatable list behind Jericho.
Great stuff. Ray, did you have any thoughts on the star debut that kind of fell short, the mainstream attempt?
So are we talking, hold on, because I want to think about favorite angles.
Yeah, you can think about it. Think about
later,
that, yeah.
That's one that's going to require some thought.
Yeah.
Now, when you say mainstream debut, do you mean a debut outside of wrestling, or do you mean like their debut in?
I got a good one for you, Ray, that I don't think we've thought of. Ultimate Warrior on Arsenio Hall.
Okay, so we're going.
Like
okay,
that.
So that.
Or that music video. He was on that music video with. So who was it? He did the. He was in the ring with this performer. With the singer. Who was it? Oh, I can't think of it. It was in the 80s.
Yeah.
I can't think who it was.
Right.
I'll look it up. I know what you're talking about, though. Sorry to crap on your thing, Pat. What were you saying?
That's all good, my friend.
No, their debut kind of outside of the wrestling world.
Yeah.
That Ultimate Warrior one on Arsenio Hall. That's a pretty good one. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to go this one. Bob Backlund once unsuccessfully ran for senator in Connecticut, and I think that is one of the absolute worst things.
Linda McMahon has done it twice.
Yeah, I know, but
yeah.
You know, I guess it's funny to talk about Backlund because he has an actual career that he can point to, whereas Linda McMahon.
He's also crazy.
Mostly. Yeah, whereas Linda McMahon's
so
career.
Linda.
Mostly her career is that she married Vince, and I'm just not sure that's – I don't think you point to that on the wall, you know, like, hey.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
I had the opportunity to meet Bob a few years ago in the Connecticut building of the Big E, which, if y'all don't know, is like a huge state fair where you get representation of all the New England states.
I'm glad to hear you weren't in Big E.
No, not in Big E. We didn't get with Miss Frizzle and get on the
thing.
Bus. Yeah.
Different thing.
But, man, he was so great to talk to.
You were, more power to you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a handsome fella. But
I would love to talk to him.
No, because he is, like, I hope it's no disrespect. I know the term crazy is a little, but he is legitimately not well.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said
crazy. I thought it was a gimmick, and it seems like we were living the gimmick at that point in time. But he gave me a nice autograph that I'll eventually hand to my daughter, since he signed it to my gimmick name, and that's her real name.
Did you have to unpack
with a therapist, not now.
Did you have to recite the presidents or anything like that in order to get the autograph?
He was talking to me about getting him bookings with the company I was working for. I am just the ring announcer. I do not do any of that. I'm like, here's the guy's information. That's Joey's problem now.
Hey, before I sign off, guys, I just wanted to kick out one more of my favorite angles of all time. And this one, talk about legendary. Iraqi sympathizer Sergeant Slaughter.
Yes.
What an angle.
When he came back, he was like, I want my country back. It was amazing. He went all around.
I mean,
he was crying at the Washington Monument.
G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
was
a
cool
real life G.I. Joe, and he's out here with the Iron Sheik and Colonel Mustafa, and just talking about how great Saddam Hussein is and how much better it is under his regime.
Yeah.
And not only was it a spectacular angle because of the heel turn that, like, you – and before, yeah, keep in mind, before Hogan's heel turn, this was probably the only other guy you couldn't see going in this direction. Uh-huh. Nobody else – you know, Hogan going Hollywood is akin to Sergeant Slaughter, you know, just saying goodbye to the
red, white,
cool,
blue. That was cool.
But it also had this great – excuse built in for them when they couldn't sell out WrestleMania, and they were like, oh, they were death threats. We had to move it inside.
Right.
They, you mentioned it. I actually thought that too, and I also thought the Iron Sheik teaming with Nikolai Volkov to sort of become the anti-American powers.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I kind of wonder, like, how much of that was Sergeant Slaughter, and I love Slaughter, so this is absolutely no disrespect to him, but, like, I wonder how much of that was just Sheik continuing to work his magic on everything he touches.
Oh, my God.
Amazing. The Gimmick Battle Royal, which was, of course, made by the Gobbledygooker.
on that note, turn it over.
Yeah, we're going to turn it over to – Ray, first of all, what did you want to talk about tonight before these guys go?
So – I kind of thought that I was going to continue the topics from.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. Sounds good. Okay. Well,
take it over, Ray. I'm giving you all my topics. You can run with them.
Yeah.
We'll see you all next week.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Gentlemen,
pleasure,
as always, it's been a pleasure, and we'll talk to you
always
next week.
And
step in the room with Brady Hicks.
All right, and all you guys, for sure. You know, before they go, or while they're going, I just wanted to mention, before we go to commercial break, I had a funny Bob Backlund story. It was amazing. When he was in TNA, do you remember that run? From the airport, he decided that he didn't want to take a car to get to Universal Orlando. He would walk, whatever the miles were, if it was 6-7 miles, whatever it was, he would walk every time from the airport to Universal Orlando in the pouring rain. Rob, I think it was Rob Echoes, I could be wrong, somebody who was in Impact at the time, I think it was Rob, sent me a picture of Bob Backlund pulling his suitcase with an umbrella in the pouring rain. It was amazing.
You
he didn't want to ride.
Me that picture before.
He didn't want to ride. Yeah.
You sent me that picture before. That might be – he's – maybe that could be something we end up talking about. Like, who are who are wrestling's, who's your favorite legitimate crazy person?
In wrestling or out of?
I suppose for the sake of the show, we keep it in wrestling, but
yeah,
yeah. Actually, when we come back, that's what we'll talk about. Who is your favorite legitimately crazy person?
Yeah, let's go to a commercial break, and we have a couple callers on the line as well. 914-338-1885. It's in the room on the VOC Nation Wrestling Network, and we'll be right back. We'll be back in a couple minutes, I should say.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, this is a Total Package. Lex Luger. You're listening to the VOC Nation. Don't miss out.
Since 2018, there's only been one program that brings you artists from around the world, both big and small, brings you the best in local talent, and hosts live events. Rock and Roll Union is all of that and more. With DT McManus, the Lovely D, and new co-host Psycho Steve Preston, you're sure to get everything you need. So tune in Mondays at 6 p.m. for your one-stop shop for all things rock and roll. Rock and Roll Union, music worth fighting for.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Kazzy Fitz, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Taku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And then
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into, like, snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Wrestling with History, the voice of choice, and Killer Ken Resnick.
When I die, they're going to open me up and find about 2,000 undigested Northwest Airlines cheese omelets.
Mr. Chris Cruz, what's going on?
Jesus, how did I get roped into this?
General Adnan went to school with Saddam Hussein.
He cried, I cried, he cried, and who could have
cried? Adnan lost a lot of family in the Iraqi war.
Everybody loves Granny.
Wow. Yeah, see, a lot of people don't know that.
Yes, Jerry, you guys are busting me up.
Catch Wrestling with History with Ken Resnick and I live on VOCNation.com or listen to the podcast by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school, match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out, VOCNation.com, WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Yo, this is Jerry Stein of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobs here. You get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby, because it's about to get nasty all around and up in this mother. Get ready. Nasty Sensation is coming at you.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
All right, in the room, we're back. It's VOCNation.com. Brady Hicks here. We've got Papa Stro, we've got Ray, and we've got you guys as well. 914-338-1885. Tonight, we're talking our favorite wrestling angles. We had something else, and I'm drawing a blank at the moment. I apologize. Ray will be able to fill us in, though. Before we get back into it, though, Stro, the future award-winning actor and performer, tell us what's on your docket for this week, man.
Well, always in full swing. This Thursday night, WCW Retro, a 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on VOCNation.com, we'll be creating our own Starcade cards from stars from past and present. So if you like to call in and create your own Starcade card of your own,
that's cool. Yeah.
Good time.
You gotta have a dog collar, Matt.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This Friday night, my sci-fi horror show, The Show Zone, at midnight Eastern Standard Time on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/showthemaestro. The feature will be The House on Haunted Hill, starring Vincent Price.
That's a good one. That's a scary one. I remember watching that in the theaters, actually. And Stro, by the way, if we're talking kind of scary films, he's way too humble. But he's up for a bunch of awards for The Devil's Daughter. If you guys go on YouTube, you can actually find the full-length film. Be sure to check it out, The Devil's Daughter. Just an it's the Harley Quinn origin story, and you were Dr. Arkham. And you did an amazing job, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Amazing, great cast and crew as well.
It's an amazing movie. And if you're a fan of Batman, I definitely recommend checking it out, or Harley Quinn, or The Joker, whatever. Just good stuff. Just really good stuff. We also have Ray joining us. Ray, we missed you last week, man. How are things going in your world?
Oh, things are just delightful, Brady. You know, every day is a beautiful gift. I don't know from whom. I don't know
a
why.
Gift?
Yeah, a gift. I don't know from who. I don't know why I've been forced to receive the gift.
It's from the.
Here I am.
It's from the kids around the corner. It's a bag of dog poop. It's a gift.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm only playing.
Well, men, we're talking gimmicks and then legitimate crazy people. Who is
That's it.
Yeah, who are our favorite just legitimately insane people from wrestling?
From wrestling. Legitimate, too. Not like, not like Nikki Cross in NXT. Like, no, like legitimately crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like Scott Steiner.
Mm.
Crazy man. I love him, though. I was a huge Scott Steiner fan.
Oh, for sure. And like, a lot of the guys we come up with are probably going to be very lovable guys.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop. And respect the hell out of them for what they accomplished.
Yeah.
But that's not going to stop them from labeling them as just legitimately out of their minds.
Exactly. I mean, if you don't mind, I'd love to start out. It's the perfect example, the one that I think of right away, and it's actually the one where he was an example earlier in the evening for worst mainstream debut, because he was in Ready to Rumble, and his performance left something to be desired. I'm talking about the man who actually used the nickname Psycho, Psycho Sid. Crazy guy. I love him. I was
a big
fan.
Sure. We've interviewed him on this show, and
No, he wouldn't do it. That was when I hung up on him. We did the pre-interview, and I hung up on him because he started yelling at me.
Right.
Yeah. But I love him still. I was a huge fan. I just won't go to a convention that he's at because I'm terrified of him.
Well, that's understandable.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot we could throw out there. I would say
Just another one to throw out there. Look, I understand wanting to make sure that you're able to capitalize on as much of your value as you can when you are making your income the way wrestlers make their income. But changing your name to Warrior, I think...
By the way, I think it's great that his entire family still has the last name Warrior. Like, he's gone, and the lunacy lives on.
You want to talk about a great name for, like, this podcast episode, The Lunacy Lives On.
You know, it's funny, too, because we were talking about the XFL earlier, and I always said they missed a golden opportunity by not having a road team that didn't have a home arena and have them hail from parts unknown. It would have been amazing.
That would have been good.
Really good.
That would have been really, really good.
Yeah, really good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But you were saying Warrior. I cut you off there.
Lunatic. You know what? I mean, definitely made everything around him, despite the fact that, look, I don't think you'll find a person on this show. And that goes back into this show's archives, all the way back to when we were doing this on Spreaker, which is, God, a long time ago now.
With the repeating in my earpiece, that was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I don't think you'll find any host in the history of this show that's going to come out and say, oh, Warrior made everything around him better through his talent and his incredible work and his in-ring ability. Like, no. Nobody's gonna come out and say that. But I'll tell you what. But he is a testament, Warrior is, to, like, if you are just completely out of your mind enough that you can actually will things to be better just through, like, sheer tyranny of, you know, indefatigability.
Sure. You know what I'll say about Warrior, and I thought, because I was a huge fan, and I think a lot of people who are kind of our age were. And I think that, and I'm trying to think of an example that would disprove my point, and I just can't think of one, because other than Andre the Giant, I don't think that any one wrestler created as great of a mystique surrounding themselves as the Ultimate Warrior did. In the late 80s and early 90s, like, that guy, he wasn't the most talented, but he had whatever it was. People watched it. People gravitated toward it. People loved it. And sure, he was a pain in the ass from what I understand to deal with backstage, but really, like I said, he had that mystique thing down at a time when not everybody did. He was special.
He was.
So, you never... Was. I mean, I know you were in the company with him a little bit. Did you ever have any Jim Hellwig moments, as they call them?
Oh, you know, a few times, you know, that I bumped into him. I mean, he was always cordial towards me.
Yeah.
You know, cordial and everything. I mean, I know, you know, from others, he kind of rubbed some others kind of odd with his ways, so to speak. But, I mean, he was always, like, really cordial towards me, really nice, so.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to harm, I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but, like, I don't know. I just, the way I perceive the guy, having never met him, and believe me, we tried. We reached out to him so many times to get him on this show. When we could have. And it always kind of kills me that we were never able to. But, yeah, like, he was one of those guys, like, from 12-year-old me all the way through, like, when I became more, like, I guess you'd say woke to wrestling and, like, what's going on behind the scenes and stuff. He just always, even, like, today, Ray, like, I'll read a dirt sheet from, like, the early 90s or, like, the late 80s, and it was like, I don't know, there was just something about the guy that just always seemed so special, even, like, to people who knew differently.
I think part of it is that there's a combination to sort of pull that off. There's a combination of they have to end up being – some of this is fate because you have to be booked well enough.
Yeah.
You have to be booked well enough for this to matter. You know, for as talented as the man behind the gimmick was, but nobody was ever sitting around just thinking about the mystique surrounding the Red Rooster. Like, that's just not, you know, talent of the man behind the gimmick now, just nobody was. You have to win enough things and enough meaningful things to where you're kind of viewed as being in the big time. And then also pair it with something that is so over the top that you almost can't fathom seeing it in public.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And maybe a little bit better execution of it, even though by all accounts he wasn't a crazy person. He just had a bit of an anger issue for a while. Take like the late 80s Macho Man.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine in the 80s just seeing Randy Savage out wandering around being Randy? You almost like couldn't wrap your head around it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what it was with Ultimate Warrior. It was just the right combination of the dude kept being in position to be booked as a winner, you know, whether through talent or subterfuge or just luck.
Subterfuge. Really, there's a $5 word.
That's a tier two word, Brady. So, no matter what, it doesn't matter. He had just the right combination of he got booked to win,
mm-hmm.
and he was so obviously not just a regular dude. And maybe the opposite end of that would be Steve Williams, who did regularly win and meaningful matches at that.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, when you looked at him, yeah, I mean, the name Dr. Death was cool, but ultimately, he could just be some dude on the street that worked out.
Yeah. Well, you know what, and I think part of it, and Dr. Death, for a long time, really until like the late 90s, he always avoided the cartoon world of WWF, you know? And I think part of it, why the Warrior and, like you said, Savage, and I think Andre for sure, why, like, they had these mystiques about them. It certainly, like you said, it's a great combination of, like, being special and winning all the time. But another thing, I think, is that WWF largely really, really, their fans maybe weren't in necessarily on the fact that it was work. Do you know what I mean? Especially, like, the younger fans. Like, when we were younger and we're watching these guys in the late 80s and early 90s, I mean, me at 10 years old, I don't know that I was aware. And I'm sure a lot of people were the same. And I think the fact that there's this mystique surrounding the wrestlers from this time period because most people didn't read the dirt sheets, I think that that's exactly why they have that mystique versus, like, The Rock or Mankind from later on, or like Roman Reigns today. You know, there's too much is exposed today. You know, you see documentaries and you see how people are behind the scenes. There's no documentary of Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior going over their match backstage. There's not, unless you were there or knew somebody who was there, you really weren't aware of what was going on.
No, that's definitely true. There is something to be said about the need to create mystique around wrestlers, and you just don't see it the way you used to.
Right.
You do see some guys get it to one degree or another here or there, but you don't necessarily see it on a regular basis and to the magnitude that you normally would see it.
Sure. For sure. What do you guys say we take a call? And we'll get you guys' thoughts as well. We're talking about favorite angles from the past. We're talking about favorite crazy people in wrestling. and we're talking about whatever you want to talk about as well. Let's bring on Steve down in Virginia. He's always good for this. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, greetings, grappling fans.
Greetings, grappling gurus. How you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Just listening in. I wasn't sure what the topic was. I called in when you were talking about Sid, so I'm glad you could enlighten me.
Well, let's start. First of all, let's start with AEW because they had a groundbreaking moment last week. MJF and who's the other guy? Phil Brooks with his I'm only kidding. CM Punk. MJF and CM Punk head to head on the microphone for 20 minutes. 20 minutes. I mean, was it everything that you expected, Steve?
Yeah. It was interesting seeing them tease it in Norfolk, and then I think they really delivered. Somebody that I listened to brought up maybe they over-delivered because I don't know when their match is going to be, and I'm wondering if they're going to do the best of three. So it's going to be interesting to see how they follow that because it it got a big reaction, and I saw the post about Edge referencing it on Raw. I didn't see that Raw segment, but it was big enough for them to mention it on TV on Monday, which was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, my initial thought with the whole thing, with that segment with MJF, is like 20 minutes is a long time. You know, in a two-hour show, that's a sixth of the show. Realistically, it's even more than a sixth if you're counting that, you know, if you're taking out the commercials. I don't know. Like, I just looked at it like there's something to leaving people wanting more. I don't think even the original pipe bomb lasted 10 minutes. I think it was more like five. You know, I just thought it was a bit long. But otherwise, I thought it was good. It definitely built intrigue as far as, like, you know, seeing that match, but yeah, I just think little things like that is where AEW is still, I don't want to say grasping at straws, but I just feel like they're still feeling their way in a lot of ways. You know, WWE might open the show with a 20-minute promo. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh. You think I'm being too harsh?
No, I think you're giving a very legitimate criticism, and it's one that yes, I'm pretty well on the record on the show as far as my stance on AEW and that I think it's far and away overall the better product right now. But no, that is a very real criticism. Is that there are times where you see, you know, Brady, you get this because you've done different broadcasting stuff before, that there's this idea of, like, you can never in the moment declare something to be just the greatest or the biggest or the best or present it as such, because you always have to leave yourself saying, okay, but what's the next step? Because there's always going to be another, in this case, another promo, another match, another outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And too often, and credit to WWE for actually having gotten away from this for a while. Too often, AEW will, everything is for that, this is the biggest thing. Like, no, it's not. And it's not, and you need to not treat it that way. And you need to not give it the airtime that would make it appear to be something that it's not. No, I think it's a very real criticism.
It's like, and I'm going to bring on Derek, by the way. We're talking about the MJF promo from last week. I at some point, if everything is always the biggest, you're going to take away from something that actually is going to be the biggest thing. You know, because it's like crying wolf. You know, if I'm always lying about something, and not to say that it's lying, but I'm pretty sure that's not the biggest moment in AEW history. So, like, if you're constantly calling something the greatest and the biggest, and, Derek, it's just at some point, people stop paying attention when the real thing comes along.
And it's
how you
funny
doing?
Saying that because, oh, I'm doing great. How's everybody doing?
Good.
It's funny you mentioned that because
I didn't watch Raw. I didn't watch most of Raw, but I saw the Edge Miz promo. And as soon as I watched it, I thought, uh-oh, everybody's going to compare it to the CM Punk MJF thing. And when the MJF Punk thing happened, I was like, okay, that was good. I didn't think it was as great as everybody else thought it was, I guess. But you're right. Every time something happens in AEW, this is the greatest moment. This is the greatest moment. It reminds me of WCW where you would turn on the Nitro and Tony Schiavone would be like, this is the biggest night of our industry. And I was like, well, you just said that last week. So
it's always getting bigger, brother.
I've seen some people go, oh, this is the best promo, you know, in AEW history, and, you know, Punk is the best talker in wrestling and blah, blah, blah. But I've heard them say this a million times. When Cody Rhodes cut that passionate promo, which seems like forever ago, they told me that was the best promo ever. John Moxley beat Jericho, that was the greatest moment in AEW history. When Sammy Guevara beat Miro, that was the greatest moment in AEW history. It's always something. To the point where I remember when their ratings were getting pretty bad, and Tony Khan would take to Twitter and be like, tonight, if you're a wrestling fan and you love wrestling or you fell out of love with wrestling, tune in to Rampage or tune into Dynamite tonight. It's going to be one of the greatest shows you've ever seen. It's like, all right, like, now you're in Circus Man selling mode now. And
Barney.
I don't know if they're doing this because the audience isn't where they think it should be. I think they're doing like 900,000 a week, and I think Rampage does maybe 300, between 400 and 300,000. So maybe that audience isn't matching their expectations. Because look, all these guys are bringing in. At some point, you have to look at your audience and you have to go, uh-oh. It doesn't matter who we sign. It's not changing anything. And I remember Eric Bischoff said that today. He goes, you got to be careful bringing all these wrestlers in. But over the next couple of months, it seems like they expect Bray to be there and Kevin Owens and Keith Lee and Kyle O'Reilly. Who's going to move the needle?
And here's my thing. And I'm not saying that the growth potential isn't there because I think they have a good show. I just think that they need to stop worrying so much about the numbers and just worry about the product. And they're clearly becoming fixated on the numbers. And when WWE used to do that, it was a terrible formula for success. The only ones I ever saw that were fixated on the numbers and continued to thrive were WCW in their heyday, like 96, 95, 96, 97. They're the only ones I've ever seen where that was the case. Usually, worry about the product, and the numbers will come, not the other way around. I also found it interesting, and I don't know how much you guys remember from back in the day, but when Vince McMahon was on commentary for his own product, he only called his show the greatest once a year. It was at WrestleMania. It was the only time that he ever called anything the greatest, the spectacle, the whatever. He didn't use that the rest of the year, primetime wrestling, Raw, whatever. Everything was good, don't get me wrong, but, he just didn't use that kind of verbiage when he was talking about anything but WrestleMania.
And it's because you're not supposed to.
Right.
When you're calling something, when you're on the call for something, and Brady, you and I both actually do this, like outside of this show, like, that you don't just sit there and immediately hype. It's the Gus Johnson criticism that not everything can be heart attack inducing.
Right.
not everything can be just the single greatest play in history. Sometimes things just happen, and it's okay to call them as such and then let the audience breathe and decide for themselves if it was memorable or not.
Good point. Now, Steve, you hear all that and you think I'm probably trashing AEW. I'm not. I think the potential's there. I do. I just think that they need to worry more about, like, just continuing these compelling storylines and fresh matches. That's where I'm at. That was a good segment. It's just a little too long, but I enjoyed it.
No, I my mind's on independent wrestling right now. I was at a show on Sunday, Next Generation Wrestling, and that was pretty fun in the Richmond area.
Other than ECWA, I haven't been to an independent show in forever. It's been a long time. Like, since I've just gone and sat in the crowd, you know. We were talking tonight about our favorite angles of all time. And Stro, actually, Derek, he broke my heart. Stro broke my heart today. It's like he told me Santa Claus didn't exist. Mm-hmm. We were talking about our favorite wrestling angles, and I mentioned when Earthquake – so many of my great memories are tied in with Earthquake sitting on things, whether it's Hulk Hogan or Jake the Snake, whatever the case may be,
or
Big Boss Man, Tugboat. They made the snake burgers. Stro told me today on the show, mm-hmm. November 30th, approximately 9:25 Eastern time approximately, Stro ruined my childhood by telling me that Jake Roberts had a snake in every town.
I thought he brought
that bag in the airport with him. I thought, like, how wrestlers carry title belts. I thought for sure. How many Damians were there? I thought there was one. I thought he got sick.
That's hilarious.
And that's why he had to get the Cobra instead.
Well, there were times he could bring the same snake, though. I mean, it wasn't like all the time thing.
Okay.
Like every now and then when he couldn't, like, bring the snake with him due to different reasons, they would have another snake to use.
They did have another one. Okay, so it was more like the Olsen twins.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I like the idea that maybe there was some sort of snake temp service, and when he couldn't get the real Damien, out of the play, so, you know, and they put somebody just preposterous to do this. Like, they put Jesse Ventura on it, and he's got to call up every snake temp agency in the area.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a boa constrictor immediately.
And then Stro was telling this story about how one time in one of the towns, they came with the box with a snake in it, and Jake opened it up, and the snake was too heavy for Jake to hold it on his shoulders. It was just too big.
Oh. Yeah. When he told me that story, I lost it. Oh my gosh.
That's funny.
I will tell you,
Steve,
Jake.
Go ahead.
Jake hates snakes. I think that's.
What?
I think that's understandable.
Does he really? I never knew that.
Oh, yeah. He's
like, I
got
thought he
bite
said it, but I thought he was trying to be funny.
Wow. Hey, here's a little story for you. I got to tell the story on the topic.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to go out the boat with him out in Texas, right? And we're getting things together, like, to do some fishing out there, and he sees this green snake, right, this garden snake, and freaks out and starts, like, he had a hoe and just, like, shooting it away. And I'm like, dying. You know, I'm, like, laughing so hard.
Yeah. Uh-oh, you're pixelating there. You're not coming through. Steve, did you have anything else?
Am I there?
Well, you were talking.
Yeah, you're
sorry,
back. You're back.
Yeah, go ahead,
sir. That story is hilarious when you look at the guard stick, man. I was just losing it.
Yeah,
oh,
we lost you there. We didn't hear that story.
Oh, yeah. Well, he sees this garden snake, right?
Yeah.
He freaks out. He starts chewing away with a hoe, right? And I'm dying, you know. And
he's a snake.
You know, to take all those dangerous snakes he's handled, and this little garden snake freaks him out.
And so you ruined my childhood telling me that tonight. But I remember him on this show. We had him on a couple times, but the one time, Steve, he was talking about his paranoia, Savage's paranoia, with the cobra bite, where Savage insisted mm-hmm. that Jake take the bite from the snake before he did, just to make sure that it was safe.
Damn right. Good for you, Macho. Smart man.
Stand up for yourself, man. Be a man. Be a man.
Well,
be a man. I'm only playing.
Yeah. Jake be a man, Hulk Hogan.
You get bit. You get bit, brother. Steve, you have
talking earlier, and there should have been a John Cena Macho Man duet rap at some point. That would have been tremendous.
Yeah.
That'd be a man album. I love it.
Yep. And you got to mute Max Caster for that. I don't have the heart for that one.
That in and of itself, I don't know if that would be a great angle or not. I'm going to count it as one, but Macho Man becoming a rapper.
That was the one that Kevin brought up. And I said that I think Slim Jim canceled that out, at least. He had enough goodwill from Slim Jim. He could have done whatever he damn well pleased after that.
And then he did
Spider-Man.
That's right. And you know what? Bonesaw was ready.
Bonesaw was ready.
Speaking of Bonesaw, my friend and I were at a Jake Roberts show, and she actually did Bonesaw in front of Jake Roberts. It was funny. On a stage with a microphone, because Mickey James put her up to it. On the topic, Bugsy McGraw and Joe LeDuc, if we're talking crazy wrestlers, like, those two need to be mentioned more.
Yes. Yeah, Derek, and we're also talking crazy wrestlers. Mine was Sid, and Ray's was Bob Backlund.
Favorite angles?
Sorry, go ahead.
Favorite angles that don't get mentioned a lot enough are Eddie turning on Ray when he, you know, ripped the mask and did the brain buster and the steel steps, and the promo after was great. And then I know Jim Cornette's talked about it, but Ox Baker and Ernie Ladd, the riot that they caused. Like those.
Okay.
Those moments are pretty significant.
Oh, I got my favorite. I got mine.
See, Steve, a man after my heart. Bringing up Ox Baker just like I did.
Second Ox Baker reference tonight, by the way. Good old Ox.
I think.
Oh. Steve, did you have anything else? Because we're going to.
Check out Next Generation Wrestling Tennessee and United Elite Wrestling from Richmond, Virginia. And thanks for having me on talking about wrestling.
No, thank you. Thank you, Steve. And we'll talk to you real soon, hopefully.
I had one. I got to throw Uncle Terry Funk out there, man. Terry
Dude,
Funk, man.
Good old Uncle. That's a guy who's not quite right.
He's middle-aged. I know that.
I remember there was a match one time, and I don't know. He had a Brandon Iron, and I think it caught like the ring apron on fire because he lit the Brandon Iron on fire. Right?
Oh my god!
And before the match, I think it was with Dusty, and he's like, he does a promo on Dusty, right? And where he says, I'll do Terry best I can. He's like, you know, I respect everyone in this business. I even respect that banana nose Ric Flair. But I've always hated you, Dusty Rhodes, you big, fat whale. And I see Dusty in the corner just, like, covering his face with a loser laugh the whole time. Because the promoter made a mistake of giving Terry Funk the microphone before the match started.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I don't think that's a mistake. I think that is exactly the decision that I want someone to make. You know, another one that maybe kind of goes along with that, like a dude – that you don't initially think of, but you look at what they did and how they talked, and God, they're not on there. I'll tell you, anybody whose vision is as bad as Stan Hansen's is, and then says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to clothesline people as hard as I can, even though I can't really see where they are or what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah, he's half blind.
Yes.
Nuts.
I'm going to get the kind he did to Larry on Lex Luger. I think it's Halloween Havoc. Or so, and Luger literally became cross-eyed. he didn't take a regular fall bump. He just like landed on his butt.
That's enough to knock you cross-eyed.
He knocked him so hard, which is hilarious.
Crazy, crazy, absolutely crazy. Derek, you got a favorite moment?
I've actually got a favorite moment and a crazy person. My favorite angle. And it took a lot of balls to do at the time, in hindsight. When they turned The Rock heel at Survivor Series, when he became, like, corporate Rock, and for, like, the first, those 2 months leading up to Survivor Series, he was, like, the biggest face on the show, not named Stone Cold. And for them to turn him in that night, and for everybody to be pissed off, and you went from having two monster baby faces in him and Austin to having a monster baby face in Austin, a mega heel in Vince McMahon and a monster heel in The Rock to go against the babyface Austin. And I don't think a lot of people would book that today. I think if that was the day, they would just keep The Rock as a babyface. And they'd build somebody and up not, to be like the big bad guy.
Yeah, and not only that, I watched that show with Matt Grimm and a couple of DJ, I think, was there. A couple of us were sitting around in college watching this match. And I remember saying that they had one star going into that match, one megastar. Well, two if you count The Undertaker. But really, I just meant Stone Cold Steve Austin was like the man in WWE. Mm-hmm. And coming out of that night, they had a 1A, and they had a 2 because they made Mick Foley that night as well, the sympathetic babyface with everything that happened. That was when he took off, too.
Yeah, and it was almost too good because then, like, for the next 7 Survivor Series, they would do the whole We Screwed You thing. But that was great, and you were upset because The Rock betrayed you. You felt bad when Mick Foley's dressed up and he looks at Vince and he's like, "Dad, I don't understand what's going on." It's like, oh, it was so great.
It was really good. That was a great one. Great memory.
My crazy person is a guy I don't think a lot of people tend to think is crazy, but if you look back at some of the stuff he's done, he's a nut. Kurt Angle is crazy. Like, he's just like, if there's a story where he tells the story of him and I think it was him versus Benoit in a cage match, and the winner of the cage match got a title shot against Steve Austin, and Steve Austin's ringside and he's watching the match, and Kurt Angle goes, "Me and Benoit wanted to put on a great match." So they're jumping. Benoit's doing headbutts off the cages. Kurt's doing backflips off the top of the cage and hitting nothing.
Yep,
and he goes,
yep.
"I look at Steve." And he's like, "You look at Steve Austin, and you can see it on his face. I'm not working with either of these crazy bastards. They're crazy."
Right.
And I remember Steve going, "God damn it." Like, he's losing his mind. And then Kurt goes to TNA, where he's not wrestling in front of that many people. And he's doing moonsaults off the top of the cage in front of, like, 300 people in Tennessee. And it's like, Kurt, this isn't WrestleMania in front of millions and millions of people. But,
yeah.
Kurt was a madman.
He was a nut. He really was. And I think if his body allowed it, he still would be. I really do. The one that always comes to mind for me, Derek, was Shane McMahon at that King of the Ring when they had the worked glass and it wouldn't break. And he kept doing like the German, I think it was a German suplex. Well, I think he kept suplexing Shane into this glass just to try and get it to break.
That was so bad.
And his head was banging off it, and his head was hitting the ground, and he'd picking up and trying it again.
And then he just got so mad he just grabbed Shane by his head and threw him through it head first.
Right.
And I was like,
That was crazy. That was crazy. Yeah. That was insane. Let's go to That wasn't a reflection of you, Justin. It's just a lot of callers on. What's going on, Justin? How you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing good. I can't complain.
Well, tonight we're talking about favorite wrestling moments. Do you have a favorite wrestling moment? We're trying to go by the book here. We're trying to keep things moving.
Oh, I like. I would say I like just about any moment with The Rock and Stone Cold. Those guys were. That was my favorite. Like all the segments that they did together.
What about? And here I am, Derek. I'm blasting MJF and CM Punk and AEW for doing 20 minutes on a 2-hour show, just talking to each other. And I seem to remember Stone Cold and The Rock singing karaoke with each other for at least 35 minutes of a show.
Didn't they sing like Margaritaville? They sung something.
They were singing Margaritaville. Yeah, he's like, yeah.
It was something.
There's another segment.
It's another segment Stone Cold's fault.
There's another segment I'd like.
Too,
I wouldn't say.
I remember, not to cut you off there, Justin, but, like, I remember, oh, too, like, because they had, like, their little, like, they would act like they would do each other's catchphrases. Do you this was how good they were. Like, they could just goof around. Like, The Rock, he's just like, Stone Cold starts talking, and The Rock just starts going, like, what? What?
Yeah,
like,
what?
And then Stone Cold grabs a microphone and he goes, Yaki. It's so stupid. It's so dumb. But they were so good at it that like that 20 minutes with MJF and CM Punk, I enjoy them both on the microphone, but that felt at least an hour and a half long. Whereas, like, the 35 minutes or whatever it was with Stone Cold and The Rock, that was something I watched with Kelly, and it just flowed.
Yeah.
It was so good.
I was thinking this about Punk and MJF. If Punk beats MJF, does that help him in any type of way? Like, has this feud helped him in any type of way if Punk beats
him, I think
he beat Darby Allin?
MJF's got to win that, don't you think? I would think so.
I would hope. I think you would. That's what I was looking to get ready to say.
They made it clear that he's taken that path to the title. In fact, I wouldn't be shocked if he was the one that beats Adam Page.
It's got to be either him or Cole, right? Like, you got to start. I saw Tony Khan upset because people were like, saying he was booking Adam Cole the wrong way, and he got offended by that. But
right.
I figure they're the two.
Well, I think, and Adam Cole will be in a better spot now that Kenny Omega's hurt because that can be his group.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's true. And then there's the logical feud when he comes back.
That is the other thing too. And this is really talented guy. Love him to death. But because he's so talented and because he's so interesting just in and of himself and because of who he is and how he is just so good at everything else, I don't want MJF around the title. He doesn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He doesn't need it, and he can make everyone else around him better without having the belt be part of the angle.
That's fine as long as he doesn't lose. I don't want him to lose.
No, I don't need him to lose either. He needs to win.
Because that takes it away from it if you do. Yeah.
No, I agree. He should have a fight with CM Punk and he should win.
Yes.
Yes.
With a side headlock.
Oh, yeah.
Takeover. Yeah, takedown. I agree. Justin, I really enjoy letting you talk there. Do you have anything else?
Oh, yeah. I would say another segment I wouldn't say it was my favorite was, it's not my favorite, but it just came on my mind when you mentioned.
Well, we're doing favorite moments.
But, yeah, I would
say.
Okay,
go ahead.
It was CM Punk and Triple H when CM Punk was like, hey, Hunter, can I be, he asked him, hey, can I wear your jacket and do the commentary or whatever it was. And they were like, yeah, go ahead. I think that was like the.
What are you talking about? I don't remember that.
You don't remember that when it was supposedly
no.
The Triple H.
So CM Punk
H.
asked to wear Triple H's jacket, and Triple H said yes, and that's a memorable moment.
Remember when everybody, if he could wear the blazer and call commentary.
Yeah, remember when everybody walked out.
Hey Brady, can I wear your cool white polo?
Absolutely. What were you saying, Derek?
No, I was saying it was when.
It's
when. All right, it's so complicated. I hate that I remember this. All right, so remember when they had the cage match and the Miz and R-Truth turned heel when they interfered in the cage match and they got arrested? Remember
they
that whole
arrested?
Big thing?
I remember the cage match. I don't remember them getting arrested.
Yeah, and they arrest R-Truth, and as they were walking out, R-Truth was screaming Attica. But the next night on Raw.
Was that Little Jimmy? Was that Little Jimmy time?
I think this was right before Little Jimmy.
Right before Little Jimmy? Okay.
All the wrestlers walked out, and it was just Triple H did commentary. Our thing, Triple H was the ref. CM Punk did commentary, and somebody had a match. And you know, Triple H was like, you want to do commentary? And CM Punk was like, yeah, but can I wear your jacket? And he was like, yeah. And that was I hate that I remember that.
That's crazy.
That was in the strike they had when all their wrestlers went on strike.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember a strike. Oh my God. Yeah. Thank you for the context, guys. Because for the life of me, I don't remember CM Punk wearing Triple H's clothes as a highlight. I don't. But thank you for that, Justin. Do you have a favorite crazy person? Please tell me it's Triple H for that in his jacket.
Favorite crazy person. I would say Brock Lesnar when he goes off on everybody. It's like before they have like a big build up, he just goes out to the ring, suplexes the other guys and throws them all around.
He is a crazy person.
Remember when he took the car door and threw it in the crowd and hit a child? Remember that when you tore the car apart?
No, I don't. I don't. I shouldn't laugh at that, but I don't remember that at all. That really happened?
Yeah, I think it was like when he was feuding with Seth, and they brought in what was Seth's guy's name? J&J Security. They brought Seth like a car, and Brock came out and like ripped the door off and threw the door into the crowd.
Yeah, he destroyed the car.
And he hit a child. I vaguely remember that. I was thinking it had something to do with like what was JTG and Shad Gaspard? But I think I'm mixing memories. I think that was something with Cena destroying, like, JBL's car.
Yeah, they destroyed his limo. Yeah.
No!
Crime Time, that was the team's name.
Yeah.
I don't remember, Justin.
It's all history anyway.
Yeah.
Sometimes I guess it's good.
Thanks for
sometimes.
Calling. Thanks for calling.
Sometimes
in.
I guess it's good to forget. Yeah.
Well, I think in WWE's case, it's good to forget. So, best left forgotten, as they say. But there were good memories. There were good moments. I don't remember CM Punk wearing Triple H's clothes. I don't remember that one. I was probably asleep when it happened, honestly. Because I used to sleep through Raw a lot back then.
Because
I was watching it, like, middle of the night, you know?
Yeah. I remember.
That was when I was using the DVR, obviously, and, like, I would just, like, try and get through it that night, so I woke up in the morning and I knew what I had seen. Like, there was one I remember. This is, like, the mid-2000s, right? Right around when John Cena won the U.S. belt on SmackDown. And I remember... Mm-hmm. You know how sometimes when you're half asleep, you remember stuff, but you probably don't remember it correctly. Like you hear a line in a TV show or something, and you have something else going on in your head. Well, I saw John Cena with a belt that spun around, like a spiral, and I thought, "Damn, I'm dreaming." And like I snapped out of it, and I hit rewind, and I couldn't believe that he actually did, because I thought that was something that I was just dreaming. Because it was like the middle of the night, and I was like, that is so stupid. That is so dumb.
One of the worst angles ever, I would say.
Horrible. And worse, like, because they're destroying the lineage of these titles. Like, that WWE spinner belt, even when Cena didn't have it, that stayed with, like, everybody for years. I want to say that was around for, like, 8-9 years.
It was.
It was horrible.
Too long.
It was. Brady, let's clear the phone lines and do some quick hits.
That sounds good. Let's do that, because it's getting late. Let's go to Tora. Has been waiting a while. Hey, it's Wyatt.
Hey,
how you doing, Tora? Hey, girl.
I'm doing
what's
great.
Going on? Yeah,
yes,
you up to a little something tonight or what? You getting in trouble?
I'm drinking.
Well, of course you're drinking. I mean, obviously. What are you drinking?
Popo? Yeah.
What's that?
Popo, P-O-P-B-O.
I'm not familiar. I'll have to look it up. Do you have a favorite crazy person in wrestling?
Yes. Titans O'Neal.
Okay. Yeah, he's pretty crazy.
When he got the Spinarosa by Cesaro.
Spinarosa. I remember that.
What'd you call it? Spinarosa. That's my favorite
move. Yeah. I thought you were going to say when he dressed up like a pirate and came out with Hulk Hogan.
Oh, Jesus.
Not that one.
No. Of course not.
Hi, Jay.
Or when he tripped and fell under the ring for the Royal Rumble.
I told her, how you doing?
Not that. He fell underneath the ring. That was crazy.
It was crazy. But that was WWE that was crazy, not him. Yep. Apparently, I guess it was on, I guess he did it by accident, but then they proceeded to, like, make it a thing for, like, 2 years.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
That was up there with Natalya farting. Remember when Natalya used to fart everywhere she went? She was doing like the squats, like.
Oh my god.
Yeah, she had a problem with UTI.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but I don't know about that. Tori, do you have a favorite wrestling moment?
Jesus Christ.
Derek, why do you keep on saying Jesus Christ for?
I just love him so much. I just want to say his name. I love him so much.
Don't forget his middle name. I'm only kidding.
I was saying probably Randy Orton.
Randy Orton is your favorite wrestling angle?
Yeah. Actually, just his birth and his conception and birth up to the present day is Thor's favorite wrestling angle.
You know, I guarantee you, if they did a WWE documentary that was just like Cowboy Bob Orton and his wife when Randy was born, I guarantee you it would get views. Probably more than Rampage. I would watch it. No, what the hell? Do you think he was born
with a doctor?
Yeah. Corey, do you think he was born with all those tattoos?
Yeah.
I'm thinking at least the arm sleeve, right?
Yeah.
Now, you remember, I've been a wrestling fan long enough to know that he used to just have like that like Goldberg like barbed wire thing around him, you know?
Right.
All he had was like the one like arm sleeve. But yeah, no, he was actually born with that. And you know what? That's why we feel bad for him because like it wasn't actually tattoos. It was a deformity. He was born with skull tattoos on his arms.
Yeah. But yeah, I want to know something now.
No wonder he's putting poop in people's bags. I'd be pretty miserable, too.
Damn, he's tattooed.
Yeah, I want to know something.
Yeah, I want to learn something from you. Go ahead.
My niece's birthday is December 31st. She'll be turning 4 years old.
Remind me. She's turning 4 or 40?
40.
40. 4. Okay.
No, I said 4.
Remind me when we get closer. I said 4. Remind me when we get closer. I'll wish her a happy birthday, but we're going to let you go tour back into the world from whence you came.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Love you.
Love you, too.
All right. Bye. All right. Let's go to Rat Boy. What's going on, Rat Boy? Rat Boy,
let me take my last bite of my sweet potato pie here. Come on now. I got my sweet potato pie here. Then you're looking good and all that other stuff. And I tell you what. As soon as I eat this, I'm on my way out the door again, and I'm going right to the park casino to gamble for a little bit, okay?
But not even
the favorite moment
that
I got. The favorite moment that I got.
Mm-hmm. The favorite moment that you
Morgan.
Got.
When Liz Morgan came out to the ring.
Right.
Ruined.
Yeah, the recent memory.
Rufus and Lana's wedding.
Oh, yes.
With the cake.
There we go.
Would you say she roofied who?
Rufus and Lana's wedding.
Rufus.
And another one you just mentioned, the Titus O'Neil falling underneath the ring.
Yeah.
Like Shaka Khan and Rufus?
That was a good one, too. You're just biting off Twitter.
Shaka Khan, yeah.
You reminded me of a really good one, though, Rat Boy. And I don't know who was around watching it during the Attitude Era, but at Armageddon, 1999, the last pay-per-view of the year, they actually had a swim pool match where Stacy Carter won the belt, and she threw up her top, and she flashed the crowd. I was at Hooters watching it with my friends. And it was an amazing moment. It felt like where we finally turned the corner where wrestling was merging with pornography. And I didn't know Stacy at the time. Obviously, like, she's a sweetheart. But really, the memorable moment was next month at the Royal Rumble. They played off that angle by having Moolah Mae Young flash everybody with the prosthetic breast. And they hung down to her knees. It was the funniest thing. That was a moment.
About next month.
That's when Jerry Lawler said that she her boobs gave out powdered milk.
Yeah. When you said next month,
what is wrong with
Brady?
He said your puppies are too droopy.
Next month, Stacy Carter will be right here in Philadelphia. At the arena.
For what? Icons?
Huh?
For Icons?
Yeah.
Okay. When is that?
I think that's the 18th.
I want to go.
18th or 19th?
Of December. 19th is a Sunday. It's probably the 18th.
The 18th.
Okay. I'm going to try and go. I probably won't make it. And the
favorite crazy character I got, number one off my list, got the Orc too. I love the guy. I love the way he acts.
He is funny.
He is
funny.
I think that's
the
funniest guy that got the guy on the show right now. Him.
Yeah. Rat Boy, how was your Thanksgiving? Good? Your family good? Everybody good? I should have said this to everybody. Yeah.
Okay. I took my mom and dad out because I won $1,000 down in Atlantic City. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
I took my mom and dad out on Thursday for Thanksgiving.
Was it real money or funny money?
No, real money.
Rat money.
And we went to the Golden Corral.
With crypto.
We went to the Golden Corral right there on Street Road in Philadelphia. We were eating. Some guy comes up, put $50 on my table, says, "Here. This is for you guys for dinner."
Mm-hmm.
I said, please. I went, wow, $50, you know, we got the free dinner.
Was the name Ted DiBiase?
I like that.
No. It was some Spanish dude, you know, he's on really healthy,
was it
noise,
okay.
Wealthy, I got all this money.
Was it Virgil?
No. It was a Spanish guy.
You with the
Golden Corral?
For Thanksgiving?
Was it Kenny Bolin?
Yeah. All you could eat, man. So you could eat all the stuff in order to make the
thing. I like Golden Corral. I like Golden Corral. I go with my parents sometimes. It's good.
Okay, but just like just make Thanksgiving dinner at home like a normal person. Stop making it okay to go out on a day when you are not supposed to go out.
I don't care. I mean,
Wait a minute. You know, it's Thanksgiving, right? There's nothing open except for restaurants. What a store of clothes. You can't go out and buy anything until the next day.
You buy it ahead of time.
You know,
the weeks leading up to it.
See, the problem is that Rat Boy actually lives in Germany, and so he has to do his grocery shopping each day.
I go grocery shopping every day. I'm shopping every day now.
I got you, brother. Well, I'm about to tap out. I'm going to submit to the shooter. Thank you, Rat Boy. It was
anytime,
great to talk
and
to
make
you,
sure
brother.
You eat that sweet potato pie that I'll be sending you guys.
Get off the damn line. Get off
the
damn line. Let's make it next Tuesday, not before. All right?
I'm going to be sending everybody a sweet potato pie by the Rat Boy. Rat Boy and
all right.
The ratty sweet
love
potato
you,
pie.
Love you, brother.
All right, Ratatouille.
All right.
Ratatouille. So, do some quick hits. Get out of here soon.
It'll be quick.
Yeah. So the Undertaker this week, he listed his Mount Rushmore of wrestling. I don't know if you guys saw this, but it was Andre the Giant, Stone Cold, The Rock, and Shawn Michaels, of all people, is the fourth. I found it funny. Not Bret Hart. I honestly probably would have had Hulk Hogan in that, but just because of the significance to the company. But it's a crazy thing because basically you've got about six or seven that deserve to be there, and there's only four spots. But I would not have used Shawn Michaels for one of those spots.
Nope.
Just my own.
That is. I guess it's nice to learn that Undertaker did not watch wrestling before 1984. That's good for him.
He was too busy living it.
I had a very different list come into my head than he did, and I will leave it at that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But that is essentially my list, but I wouldn't have put Shawn on there.
Let's save that for a topic next week. That'll be my topic, our wrestling Mount Rushmore.
That's such a hard one, but definitely, yeah, definitely. Now, The Undertaker really went crazy this week with interviews and stuff like that. And not for nothing. I know this is a fictional story, but I thought it was amazing. Kayfabe News, our good friend Colin Hunter, he posts. Yeah, I don't know. You guys remember Kayfabe News, right? This is like the Onion for wrestling. It's gotten so big in recent years to the point where, like, I don't even feel like I could book him as a guest anymore. I'll have to see because he was great. But he put up a story today about how WWE, because profits were so high, they're cutting costs. They're introducing a triangle-shaped ring. And he had a picture of it and everything. It was like a Photoshop, like, TNA deal, kind of, with the WWF logo, and it was a triangle. It was amazing. It was just, you know, just
like a pizza.
Yeah. It could be a slice of pizza, but a perfect triangle.
You know, speaking of Taker, did you see where he said there'll never be another Andre, but he feels like Omos has some of that aura that Andre had, and he wants to help him become that? Did you see when he said that?
You really? I didn't, no. And I thought he had more, like, Great Khali vibes, personally.
Oh, how dare you.
Or, like, Kurgan. That's what he reminds me of, Kurgan.
Kurgan.
He can move better than those two guys.
I would think so. Yeah, that's really about it. I saw so Scotty Too Hot asked for his release from WWE last week, and a lot of people were wondering why. Apparently, he wants to come back. He's looking to do indie dates as a wrestler again. So good to him. I wonder if part of him doesn't wonder if AEW would use him or Impact. There's a lot of opportunities out there right now.
You know.
Yeah.
And by the way, did you see the report today that said last week 48,000 people watched Impact? How are they still alive?
48,000 people, wow. I remember they used to do those pay-per-views where they said, like, oh, they had, like, 4,000 buys.
I shouldn't laugh. That's terrible.
But speaking of Impact, they I didn't watch – so I'm a little behind on it just because I'm behind on wrestling. But I watched, like, the November 18th or 19th episode or whatever it was, 2 weeks ago, basically. And they did this supernatural angle.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of you guys watched this?
No.
It was amazing. It wasn't as entertaining as it should have been or could have been, but it was, like, such a weird concept. So basically, the members of Decay.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's Crazy Steve, it's the Bull guy, Black Tarus, Mm-hmm. And I forget the girl's name. That Rosemary. Rosemary, right?
Yeah.
And Habit.
And Time.
So uh-huh. Rosemary puts a curse on a select portion of the Impact roster. And they all just appear in this house, like a reality TV show, where they're stuck there. And they're only allowed to leave when they teleport out for a match. And the match is done with the roster standing around the ring watching them. And then they come right back to the house, and it's set like a reality TV show. And the premise was they were stuck there until Johnny Swinger was happy again because they closed his pirate casino.
Jesus Christ.
So he's walking around moping and drinking, and he's just calling everybody daddy, and he's just not happy. He's just truly not happy. And they did this over the course of 2 hours. The entire show is just set in this house where, like, randomly two people would start arguing, and then they challenge to a match, and they would teleport to the ring to have this match and then teleport back to the house. This was 2 hours.
Like, I can see what it is.
This was 2 hours. And it ended with a wedding. It ended with the wedding where Swinger was going to marry one of his swingettes. And then at the last minute, like, I don't know, the one guy said, oh, I'm not a virgin because I've been sleeping with the swingette. And those two ended up getting married. And Johnny Swinger was legitimately happy for them. And the curse was lifted. And thank God that episode of Impact ended.
Yes.
I felt like I was cursed.
Remember how excited everybody was when the forbidden door was open and it was going to change wrestling as we know it? Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no... Yeah. No, it really just means we can use New Japan guys when they want to.
That's it.
That's about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Good old Impact.
But
just buy it.
Yeah,
just buy it.
But you know what? I'm enjoying that they're doing something different. I am. I hope that they continue to do creative stuff like this because it's so much different than anything else that's on TV. I just thought that was a little too long of a segment for a supernatural thing. Oh, and they also did a really funny thing with Crazy Steve because they had Chris Sabin walking around without a shirt on in slow motion the whole time playing this sexy music while all the women were excited, right? So Crazy Steve, at one point, they say something like, look at that, and Steve looks in the wrong direction. And Rosemary takes him and turns him so he's looking the right way. Just so he's blind in real life. He's like legally blind. But I just thought it was hilarious that they played off that in such a subtle way. I you know what? I applaud Impact Wrestling for trying something different. At a time when everybody just wants to do the same thing.
That's true.
Like I said, the segment was long, but it was funny. I was really looking for part of it to send you guys, but it isn't on YouTube yet, so.
That's why I love the original when NWA came back, because it was different than anything on TV, and I loved it so much. And, you know, they've lost so much talent, but I enjoyed when they came back.
And it was really good. It just felt like an 80s show. So if you can, look up different stuff. You know, that's why Lucha Underground was so good, you know? Yeah. I didn't even watch it, and all I heard about how good it was, you know? And most of it was set in Spanish, and it was really good. So, anyway, that's it, I think. I think that's about it. Derek, did you have anything you wanted to plug on the way out?
No, I hope everybody enjoyed the holiday. I'm happy to be back. I'm looking for, hopefully, the Christmas episode I can get drunk. I've been looking forward to that for a while.
You think you'll have your video going by then?
I will. I'll have video.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing. Because we've never done the drunken video.
Sorry. Yeah. And I want to send a shout-out to Big Swole, who announced she's not resigning with AEW, so hopefully she finds her.
I did see that, yeah.
Hopefully she can go somewhere and she can get a chance to perform, but I think it's just the beginning of a lot of those people like her starting to lead a company, I think.
Excuse me. She'll go to WWE. Isn't her husband is Cedric, I think.
Yeah, so I figured she'd end up there probably.
Yeah.
Mm.
So another couple reunited. See that? Ray, did you have anything you wanted to plug?
As usual, no. Thank you so much for listening both to this segment and the previous one. And make sure that you check out all of Papa Stroh's adventures over the course of the next week.
Papa Stroh's adventures. Stroh, before I kick it to you, I just want to remind everybody to go on YouTube and check out The Devil's Daughter, Stroh's movie, with the origin story of Harley Quinn. It's amazing, and it's up for a bunch of independent movie awards. So please go check it out. It's very, very, very well done. I applaud our Dr. Arkham for his for his fine work.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It was an honor, you know, great cast and crew.
Cool.
To be a part of.
Cool. Yeah, it was very good. What do you got going on this week, man?
WCW Wrestle Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to be creating our own.
Uh-oh. We lose him? Well,
am I good?
There you go. Try it again. I was just going to do it for you.
Thursday night. All right, Thursday night, WCW Retro will be creating our own Starcade cards for past and present. So if you'd like to just call in and create your own Starcade show, please tune in. And this Friday night, Mahara 5-Star show, The Stroh Zone, at midnight Eastern Standard Time at facebook.com/StrohTheMaestro. The feature will be The House on Haunted Hill, starring Vincent Price. Please tune in.
Very cool. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to In the Room this week right here on the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that are available on the network. We'll have some more this week. I know last week was kind of a light week with the holiday and everything, but we'll have some more shows going up real soon. So be sure to check everything out, VOCNation.com and your favorite podcast platform. Thank you to everybody for tuning in. Thank you to all the callers. Thank you to the best crew I could ever ask for. Each and every one of you guys just helped me out so much, from Kathy to Stroh, to Ray, to Derek, to Matt, to Kevin and Patrick, all you guys just contributing in all your little ways. I didn't mean to talk down to you. All you guys contributing in your huge ways. Thank you so much for everything. Everybody, take care. Be good to each other. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Love you all.